This is Colourful Radio.
Now then, Stephen is supremely warm and wickedly funny with the ability to charm onlookers right into the palm of his hands. He creates weird and wonderful connections with his audience who are drawn into his personal world, and his thoughts are brought to life by his chatty delivery and his ability to become the characters he's talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Stephen K. Amos.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning to you, my hun. How are you?
I'm very well this bright and sunny morning in London town. I'm very good.
Isn't it gorgeous out there?
I can't believe it. I'm absolutely just really ready to groove down this summertime. It's starting early and I'm going to go for it.
I'm telling you. And so can I just ask you, as a comedian and a writer, does the weather have any impact at all on your flow?
Does what?
Does the weather have any impact at all on your flow?
You know what? It's good. If you're in a good mood, and you know the brightness of the day, the heat, everybody else around is in a good mood. It just fuels you with energy and just a good vibe. So and also when you're doing shows and it's been a good fun day, you know people in the audience have had a good day as well. So they're already meeting you halfway. So yes, of course.
Well, you appeared on, I've seen you on television all over the place, giving your points of views, especially on those countdowns. You do a lot of those kind of, you know, those where they do the snippets, the best of this and the worst of that, the worst act.
Rent a mouth.
Talking head type thing, you know. So I'm always, whenever you come on, I always have to stop and to hear what you're saying, because it's always very funny. I wanted to know, do you actually see the clip beforehand? Do they show the clips beforehand?
Well, what they do is, if they normally have their own surveys done, so they give you a list from 1 to 100, say, or 1 to 20 of what the things are. So you have something to say about it, because if there's nothing worse than them saying, and number 19 is this, and you're like, never heard of it. So they just tell you what the things are, and hopefully you either know what it is, you come up with something very funny about it. Then many times I say, I don't want to say anything about that because, you know, I'm not interested or I really don't have an opinion on that thing. But if it's something I can talk about, then yeah, I'll just open my mouth and let it go.
Well, as I say, cream always rises to the top, and you certainly have risen to the top. I mean, what makes you? What do you attribute that to?
It's got to keep on trying, because the world of comedy that we live that we inhabit is a very, very fickle one, particularly in England, because you know people are ready to make assumptions about all of us as soon as they see us on stage. But what it is, I've been doing this for nearly 16 years now, and I keep on doing it. I might knock back from this club or knock back from this promoter, but, you know, and the more you do it, the better you get at your job, and the more you learn from the job. And I do comedy in all kinds of different places, to all kinds of different types of audiences, you know, predominantly white audiences, some predominantly black audiences, and I have to mix and match my style, depending on.
Oh, no. Technology, it's gone. Now, is he joking? Oh, the line's gone funny.
Oh.
You're cutting out.
Am I cutting out?
Right, you're better now.
Right. I'm standing still.
Great. Well, I mean, when did you realise then? Did you say it was 18 years you've been going?
Yeah.
18 years. Yeah, so is there a circuit? There must be a comedy circuit. When you kind of, on your kind of arrival part of the circuit, which is the venues that you do that makes you think, I'm here or I'm making a breakthrough?
I suppose it's got to be when you're doing kind of big venues, kind of venues like the Comedy Store in central London, or there's the Y Theatre in Leicester, kind of 400 to 500 seater venues. When you're doing those and you're doing them regularly, and people are coming to see you or asking if you're on the bill, then you kind of think, actually, I'm doing something right here.
Yeah. You know, many people would say that they just would not take off their clothes to make it. And you've gone and done that, haven't you? You've gone and done that, because there is a picture on my screen right now. You're sitting on a white couch and you don't have a stitch on. What? Tell me about that.
Well, the show about, wasn't you, maybe 3 years ago now, called All of Me. And basically, it was kind of a metaphor, because I wrote a semi-autobiographical show where I was talking about stuff in my life. I mean, you know, I never ever do that on stage normally, because I think, you know, some things you should keep to yourself.
Yeah.
But I thought, if I want the audience to trust me and believe what I'm saying, I've got to be honest. Yeah. So I thought, I'm going to lay myself bare, and that was a metaphor. Although I've got to say, people did turn up to the show thinking they were going to see a naked man on stage.
You must have had a full house that night, I'm sure.
Oh, my goodness. They all came in droves going, yes, let's see some naked man. And I had to say, look, guys, it's not the case. It's just a metaphor.
Absolutely. Good body, I have to say. I got an email here from Leslie, who says, hey, Elaine, loving the colourful flavour. Thank you for saying so. Please ask Stephen, which comedian makes him laugh most and why?
Well, if we're going backwards, I would say the comedy stylings of Richard Pryor, who was well ahead of his time back in the 60s and 70s, you know, talking about controversial things, they make you laugh still today. Today, I like people like Gina Yesterday, who I think is amazing, who's doing a lot of stuff out in L.A., which is great. There's a young white comic at the moment whose name is Michael McIntyre, who is everywhere. He makes me laugh at the moment, too. I just like to find the funny in everybody, though, really.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. And I get that from you. I really do. Listen, Stephen, don't go anywhere. We do have to take that commercial break. It's a very short break. Are you comfortable?
I'm very comfortable, yes.
All right, then stay right there. Let's take the commercial break and we'll be right back.
This is Colourful Radio.
It certainly is. A firm favourite at the Edinburgh Festival, selling out shows year after year. The imitable Stephen K. Amos will be bringing his critically acclaimed Edinburgh 2008 show, Find the Funny, to the Hackney Empire on Friday the 5th of June. Doors open at 8 p.m. or show kicks off at 8 p.m. And we've got Stephen on the phone right now. Keep those emails coming in for him. Maybe you want to tell him a joke. I don't know. all you have to do is email us, www.colourfulradio.com. That's the website. You'll see the email me icon. Click on that and let's have your questions for Stephen. Stephen, tell us about Find the Funny.
Well, basically, as I said earlier, I wrote a couple of semi-autobiographical shows, and I thought to myself, enough. People have had enough of me talking about me. Let me go back to basics and just try and write a show that's just funny. So Find the Funny came into my head when I just thought, just look around you, and you'll see funny stuff every day. Things make me laugh every day. Even just the hearing the voice of my little niece, who's only 5 years old, just laughing. She was laughing. I went, what's funny? She went, I don't know. And just carried on laughing. And that was just so infectious.
Yeah.
And so just even little things like that. And by the end of it, I was laughing myself like an idiot. And I couldn't tell you why. So that's where it came from, really.
So what were you like at school? I mean, were you a comedian from the get-go?
I've got to say, I was one of those annoying kids who did not pay attention, you know, always pulling faces on the teacher, turn their back, making the rest of the kids in the class laugh. It was all there, but back then I didn't know that you could do this as a career. You know, I've been told off lots of times, concentrate, and I'm going, but I can't, I just want to laugh. You know, I'm doing silly things all the time. And I think my English teacher seemed to remember going, go into the drama class. And that's where I think the kind of thought started to come through into my head.
That's brilliant. So as a funny man, and from what I'm getting from you, you find the funny in most situations, if not all. What are you like in a serious situation? I mean, are you married at the moment?
No, I'm very much single and available.
Do you think that might have something to do with the fact that you never take anything seriously?
Do you know, I think, you know, we all take things seriously to a certain extent, but, you know, my point is that in all our lives, things happen to us which are negative, which are bad, and it's about how we deal with them. Because my whole thing is I try to have a positive outlook. I don't want to have a negative vibe around me. And I find that the way, in order to overcome that, is to find the funnies. I mean, obviously, if you're in a terrible situation, you can't just be laughing manically, but if you try and find a positive spin out from something that's horrible, like, you know, living in South London all my life, you know, I've experienced some awful racism, I've experienced, you know, some negativity, but I kind of just go, listen, you know, those are just names, those are just words. I know who I am, I know who loves me, and I've got self-respect. So a kind of positive vibe.
I'm feeling that. When you meet people and they recognise you, do they automatically expect you to be funny, or are they like, tell us a joke then?
All the time. and all I say is, look, I'm not working, I'm really sorry. Oh, I'm polite, you know, but they think I'm not too, particularly at night time, if I'm walking through central London, and go, oh, there's that funny bloke, tell us a joke. And I just go, listen, mate, you don't take your own food to a restaurant, so I'm not going to just walk around the streets telling people jokes unless you cross my palm with silver.
Well, the notes now, Now you want notes, right?
yeah, exactly. Not silver. Give me notes, then we'll start to talk.
But do you find, though, that you, or I mean, looking back at yourself, as you was growing up and you was, you know, an up-and-coming comedian, did you find that your personality was of such where you were making people laugh constantly, and now obviously, you know, you are there, and like you say, it's about getting paid. Well, it's not totally about getting paid, but you need to switch off now because you're so busy. You know, how much has that changed? Do you follow me? It's like...
Yeah. And you know what it is? To be honest, when I was being a little funny kid, you know, people tend to be serious. My parents wanted to be serious. I actually ended up doing a law degree. That's what I did. I didn't just go straight into comedy. So I did listen to what people were saying to me. But I knew in the bottom of my heart that I didn't want to be a lawyer. If anything, I wanted to be able to speak to people, to connect with people on some kind of level. So I even had ideas of going and working in a citizens advice bureau. And then I met a woman, and she went, you're really funny. Why don't you do comedy? And back then, I'd never even been to a comedy club. I didn't even think, you know, it was a career option, you know, because I'm thinking, you know, the late 80s, the mid-90s, the TV screen, the only black comics I saw, you know, were Lenny Henry or maybe the odd guy from America. So from my point of view, as a young black British person, that wasn't even an option at all. Mm. And so when she said do this comedy thing, I ended up going to a comedy club for the first time ever, trying it out, and I didn't stop. And that was, as I say, nearly 18 years ago.
Wow. And so now it's you don't just kind of turn it on just for the sake of it.
No, I can't. It's still there in me. It's all I do. I can't even imagine doing anything else. And, you know, when I get a good idea to write something, I'll write it and then I'll go and perform it. So I don't go and do clubs anymore on a regular basis, but I start doing big tours now. And that's where, for me, that's where it's at. You know, I love it. People kind of get to like what I'm doing. And if you like what I'm doing, come and see me. If you don't like what I'm doing, I'm sure there's somebody else there that you love.
I'm sure there isn't anyone that don't like what you're doing. I've got an email here from Chris. Chris says, hey, Elaine, ask Stephen, what is the essence of a good joke?
The essence of a good joke. I think it's got to be timing, it's got to be the delivery, and it's got to be some, because my jokes are very inclusive. You know, I don't do, I've got no kind of political jokes or kind of, you know, if you make people think but make them laugh at the same time, but a joke that's inclusive and not, obviously, you know, we've moved on from the days of sexist jokes, racist jokes, homophobic jokes, are kind of dead and gone. But jokes are kind of, can include us all to reflect the kind of world that we live in, particularly in England, particularly in London where I live, which is the melting pot of different cultures, different people. Let's do jokes that we can all laugh at together. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I'd hate to go to a comedy club and see only one section of the audience laughing and getting it while some of us are going, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Or someone in the audience is the victim of that joke. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it totally does. I've got an email here from Dean. Dean says, hey, Elaine, a lovely show. Thank you very much for saying so. Please ask Stephen, what's the best heckle he has heard and how does he deal with hecklers?
I remember watching a good friend of mine, another comic, up in Birmingham, and he wasn't doing well at all. And then somebody shouted out from the back of the room with a very, very thick Birmingham accent, hey, mate, is this Faking It? Remember that TV show, Faking It?
Faking It, all right, yeah.
Faking It. So he was asking the comic if he just learned how to do comedy.
Oh,
and the whole audience just howled. And my friend, you know, there's no real comeback to that. You know, if you're not doing very well and an audience heckles you and you've got no comeback, that's it. You might as well just get off the stage. But I've had people heckle me and say something. I've had people say silly heckles, like, get off, mate, you're rubbish, or there's a taxi outside, or whatever. And bigger than your taxi outside, either you've got to come back quick and go, oh, yeah, I think your dad's driving it.
Excellent.
You know what I mean? You can't ever let a heckler win, because it means the whole audience just loses trust in you. You're the man with the mic. You're the funny man. You're in control.
Tell us about your appearance on Have I Got News For You. You know, with all the bad news and the you know, how do you find the funny in that?
Well, the good thing about that programme is that they very rarely pick on the bad elements of the news. In fact, what they would do, for example, if it was this week, they'd be talking about the expenses scandal, so we can all laugh at, you know, the MPs who we seem to be pretty greedy. You know, people that we all know, you know, may spend expenses, you know, a meal here, a meal there. This is kind of spending thousands on cushions and swimming pools and all kinds, and on mortgages that don't even exist. That's kind of, you can make light at that. You can laugh at those kind of people.
Yeah.
But obviously, if it's tragedies and you know, even the swine flu business, you know, there's stuff, there's jokes we made about that. Because, you know, when I saw the TV ad campaign and got my leaflet in my mouth, I was thinking, oh, that's how not to get swine flu. I must cover my mouth when I sneeze. Thank God they put this advert on, because my mum told me this when I was 2 years old.
Yes, yes.
And I didn't know my mum was secretly working for the government, you know, giving them advice. Because frankly, if you're the kind of person who sneezes without covering your mouth, you deserve to get sick.
But well,
just
yeah.
Half the time, isn't it?
Too right. Oh, you're a bit controversial, though, aren't you? I mean, your show, Batty Man.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, the idea for that, to be honest, came from the fact that I went out and did a show in Australia, and I came back, and then I saw a TV advert. It was the news, actually, not an advert, the news. And it was talking about someone who was killed in a homophobic attack in London. I looked up at the TV screen, and it was, and they showed a picture, and it was somebody that I knew. And I just thought, oh, my God, this is 2000. I think it was 2007 or something.
Yeah.
I thought, in this day and age, you know, people are out there on this planet who are quite happy to go and physically attack somebody because of their sexual orientation. And that really annoyed me. So I thought, I'm going to ask young kids what their thoughts were on homosexuality.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. I thought I'd make a program surrounding it. And the responses I got from the youth, I found quite alarming, particularly inner-city London kids who were saying things like, nah, it's nasty, kill them. You know, quite extreme responses. And we're talking 14, 15, 17-year-olds. But kill them, nah, man. And I just wanted to explore that, and that's where the idea came from.
Well, it was often nominated for a BAFTA. How did that make... Oh, no, that wasn't, was it? Or was it?
It was, yes, it was.
Wow, fantastic. So do we get a chance to see it anywhere? Is it lurking around anywhere where we can see that?
I think it was actually repeated only a couple of days ago on Channel 4.
All right.
Or it might be on their website. Yeah, it was BAFTA nominated, which was a bit of a surprise, because I didn't do it for that. I did it because I wanted to do something. Because sadly, there's not a lot of stuff done that I think for your own people or your own kind of, you know, to educate the youth and all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, budgets are really tight in television, and these opportunities don't come along enough for people like myself to explore areas that you might be interested in.
Well, you know, you are... you're known quite a lot in Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously travel the world and that. How different? Because I know as a DJ, playing in different countries, if you don't go to the clubs, you don't really know what their flavour is, even though they may be playing more or less the same records as you. How do you kind of prepare when you're going to appear in a different country? That must be difficult. How do you prepare?
It's quite difficult. You've got to open your eyes, and you've got to be receptive to the fact that it's a different country, different culture maybe. They've got a different way of thinking than you. So all your kind of regular jokes that you know work in London or in England, you've got to think, will these translate over there? So what I do is I go over there and I buy maybe four or five newspapers, and I talk to people, and I get a vibe of what's going on in the country. And that's my in. So I've got like 10, 15 minutes of jokes I've just written, which is about their own country and what's been happening to them. And then they kind of go, oh my God, this man has thought about us. And then otherwise, you can just go on to another tangent and do jokes, just the regular jokes that have got no kind of local references or any reliance on them having to know things that happened in England.
Well, that's the key then, really, isn't it? Is to just buy the newspapers and find out where they are.
Yeah, and talk to people, talk to the locals, talk to a selection of the locals, because otherwise, you know, if I how bold is that would be to go there and think that they will automatically understand everything I've got to say. I make an effort of listening to what they've got to say and doing, like, for example, when I was in Australia only a few, well, maybe about 3-4 weeks ago, the Australian government has just officially passed a law where they are apologizing officially to the Aboriginal population. Now, I think that's a great thing, a great, great thing. It's taken too long for them to apologize officially, but now it's happened, we've got to celebrate it. And I was talking, doing jokes about that, you know, and they were kind of going, oh, my God, this guy's read up on the news, that kind of thing.
Give us one of those jokes that you told.
But I was just going, I said, about time, too, you know, because if you say sorry quickly, people are very appreciative of that, you know. If you walk down the street, somebody bumps into you and they walk away, that really annoys you. It messes up your day.
Yes, yes.
But if that same person bumps into you and says sorry quickly, suddenly you're like, no worries, fine, see you later.
Yeah,
because it's immediate.
Yeah,
and sorry is the most difficult thing to say. But if you say sorry quickly and you mean it, danger is averted.
Right, I agree with you. I've got an email here from Joanne. Joanne says, will Stephen ever consider writing a comedy play?
Oh, do you know, I would actually. I would very much consider writing a comedy play. Hopefully, maybe in the next year or so, because I want to try and write a comedy play with roles in it for maybe about 4 or 5 black comedians, and we can put it on somewhere and hopefully get it recorded. And you know, we need a decent black sitcom on TV.
I hear that totally. I just want you to talk because you know, yeah.
You kind of, because when I go and meet people at the BBC and they kind of go, what do you want to do? I'm like, you know, there's writers out there, you know, you need to go out to the clubs and see all these young talented people and make some sort of collective, give some money to us so that we can do something. You know, I've been slipping around, as I say, for, you know, a good number of years now, and I see some of my white counterparts getting, you know, a bit of a heads up before you and all this kind of stuff. But you can't remain bitter. You just got to keep trying. And that's what I'm doing.
Good for you.
I'm still standing.
Good for you. Talking about Last Man Standing, that there's actually a show that you entered that or something. Tell me about that. What is that?
I did. It was called Last Comic Standing. And basically, it's a competition in America. I think he did it. And they get comedians from all over the world. And it's like a kind of reality show, but for comedians. Heats and whatever. So I went up there and I went to Miami. I did the semi-finals, and then I was invited across to I think LA for the finals. But sadly, I was committed to Australia and I couldn't go to the finals. It was a bit of a shame because the year before, Gina Yashere did it and she got in the top 10.
Wonderful.
Which was great. And I thought, well, I'm going to represent as well. But I couldn't make the finals. But when I saw the final edit on the TV,
yeah,
he showed it and made it look like I wasn't chosen, which I was very annoyed by. Yeah.
So do you think you'll go for it again?
Do you know, if something big happens here, you know, because I've got a couple of projects I'm working on. I've got I did a pilot for the BBC Two only about 6 weeks ago. So if that goes off, then I won't go for it again. But if it doesn't go off and Edinburgh doesn't go very well, then you'll see me back there again. I'm not proud. I'll go back.
Would you ever do the Big Brother house?
Never, ever. I say never, ever now. Yeah. Never, ever now, because I'm on a bit of a cusp. But, you know, talk to me in 6 months when I'm scraping the barrel, then, you know, never say never. But
yeah.
I would hate to think I would do that, though. It's not really my thing.
No, you'll never be scraping the barrel. What are you saying to me? Come on now. I mean, if nothing, you know, just take your clothes off and take another photograph or sitting on a chair, you know. That works. I got an email here from Matt. Matt says, fascinating listening to Stephen. I used to work in the Bedford Arms in Balham, which has a great comedy scene. Please ask him what advice he would give a young comic.
Oh, that's good. I used to do the Bedford Arms as well in Balham, which is not too far down the road from me. I remember it very well. My advice to you, to any young up-and-coming comics is write a five-minute set, right? 5-minute set of any subject you like that you think is funny. Try it out with your friends. Try it out until you're confident about it. And all you need to remember is that whenever you go on stage, you should look like you're enjoying yourself. Unless, of course, your style is more deadpan or whatever. Look like you're enjoying yourself. At the end of the day, the audience want you to be funny. You know what I mean? They're not there hoping that you're rubbish and they can heckle you. They want you to be funny. And at the end of the day, also, it's not life and death. If you don't do very well, try it the next time. Audience is a difference. But keep going. Keep trying. If you don't keep trying, you'll never know.
Great advice. What's been the highlight of your career so far, Stephen?
The highlight of my career? I tell you what, for me personally, is when my mum and dad came to see, because they don't come to see me live often at all, right? But when they come and see me, they came and saw me about, I think February sometime, and I did a night at the Bloomsbury Theatre, and it was packed. My parents were in the best seats in the house, and they dressed up for it and all that kind of malarkey. And, you know, I did my show the way I would do my show. At the end of the night, I went, can I just say, my parents are sitting there in the fifth row. The crowd went electric. My mum and dad stood up and started to bow and wave. Aww. And I was like, Mom and Dad, what are you doing? It's my audience. They're not here for you. Stop bow. A nice feeling that all these years later, that, you know, I can now say that I've made them feel proud. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
After all those years of them saying, you've got to get an education, I did that. I got an education. I did my law degree. I listened to them. You know, I've got six brothers and sisters. We've all been to college, been to uni. All of us are doing our own thing. And they can now sit in retirement and just be happy and just go, that's my children.
That's wonderful.
Even me, the one who's doing comedy, the one that they thought, what's this wayward one doing comedy for? I remember my dad saying, are you a clown?
How PC-friendly are your shows?
I don't rely on swearing. I don't rely on... when you say controversy, when my shows do have to contain elements of my own experiences, and my experiences are of a black man growing up in London. You know, some parts of the white press, I've got to say, have gone, all he does talk about is about him being black. Well, I'm sorry, that's a part of me. You know, I never ever see any of these same newspaper reviewers say, these white comics, all they do is talk about being white. They don't say that. Mm. But when they talk about me and some other black comics, they go, they just talk about being black. Mm. It's part of what I talk about, because obviously it has to be, but it's not all that I talk about.
Yeah.
Everyone is inclusive in my shows.
All right. Okay, so you've got a date coming up at the Hackney Empire for the 5th of June. 5th of June. Looking forward to that?
I am so looking forward. The Hackney Empire is a beautiful, beautiful old theatre. In fact, I'm probably going to go up there this weekend as well, because I believe it's got another really good show with a few good guys on it as well. Because they're doing a season of black comedy.
Yes.
And I can't wait. So it's my first time doing Hackney on my own. and I'm just looking forward to it.
Well, the show's called Find the Funny, and it's at the Hackney Empire on Friday the 5th of June. Is there a website that people can go to find out more details?
They can go to a comedy website called Bound and Gagged Comedy. Bound and Gagged Comedy. Or straight to the Hackney Empire website.
That's beautiful. Stephen K. Amos, thank you so much. And we are here at Colourful. Wish you all the best, and we will be coming to see you.
Thank you, Miss Elaine. And I love you as well, because you've been representing for a number of years, and we've been watching you for time, and we love you, Miss.
Oh, thank you. I didn't expect that. Thank you for saying
no,
so.
No, thank you. I did a show the other week with Misha Paris,
yes.
And again with Misha and yourself. It's people like you that keep making people like me want to keep doing it and keep coming back. So thank you too.
Bless you for saying so. Keep it colourful, my darling. God bless.
Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Colourful Radio.